Section 1, Chapter 1. The Certain Facts. Since the secret has not been divulged, it seems at first glance that we can know nothing about its contents. Many experts have repeated this statement as though it were self-evident. Any exposition on the third secret would necessarily be arbitrary and could result only in completely gratuitous, purely subjective conjectures. Attempts have been made to present this position to us as the only prudent and sure one, but in reality it is very inexact. If it is true that in 1917, when it was revealed, or in 1944, when it was written down, and still in 1960, when it should have been revealed to the world, Our Lady's final secret remained practically impenetrable, this is no longer the case now. For over 40 years, reliable historical data concerning it has multiplied. Today it forms an impressive collection of reliable information, starting with these facts the historian, using his own method, reasoning through inference, can reach solidly established conclusions. Now it is not a question of imagining, completely fabricating a secret according to our fantasy. Nor is it a question of attempting to reconstruct, with precision, the very text of the secret, which would be unbelievable presumption. No, it is a question of proceeding methodically, correctly reasoning about reliable facts, with extreme critical prudence. An investigation conducted this way proves wonderfully fruitful. It permits us first of all to resolutely set aside all the impostures, all the deceits and hoaxes which have occupied the public for over 25 years. Then, with all the false secrets unmasked, all the false hypotheses refuted, it is still possible to advance very far into the positive discovery of the secret's real contents. A first vital fact, we know the context of the third secret. There is a major truth, which often passes unnoticed, which must remain in our memory all through our inquiry. It is the fundamental unity of the great secret, revealed entirely by Our Lady during the third apparition on July 13, 1917. Thus it is a grave error to imagine three heterogeneous secrets, foreign to each other. Sister Lucy says, the secret. What is the secret? The secret is made up of three distinct parts. She says elsewhere, the first part of the secret, or again, the third part of the secret. Out of this coherent whole, we now know three parts out of four. We know the beginning, the first two parts of the secret, and the end, which surely constitutes its conclusion. In the end my Immaculate Heart will triumph. The Holy Father will consecrate Russia to me, which will be converted, and a certain period of peace will be granted to the world. In this context which we already know, following the etc. marked by Sister Lucy herself, the third secret comes to be inserted. It is like the final completion of a monument, when it has scarcely been begun. It is impossible to know what it will look like, but when three-fourths of the edifice has already gone up towards the heavens, it is not so presumptuous to imagine what is still missing. The same is true for our incomplete cathedrals or for the famous Capellas Imperfidas of the monastery of Bat al-Ha, not far from Fatima. It is not difficult for the specialist's trained eye to conceive their harmonious crowning. In November 1959, Father Meshes Dias Coelho, one of the best experts on Fatima, had highlighted this point judiciously, writing, "This third part of the secret certainly constitutes a precious part of the whole message of Fatima. If the message is a whole, the third part must be harmoniously inserted into it. It is already an indication, moreover corroborated by examination of the two preceding secrets. The third part of the secret must be in line with the whole, constituted by the messages of the angel, those of Our Lady at the Covita Iria, and then those of Pontevedra and Ty, and no doubt it gives it concrete form in a conclusive manner. This is the first fact, which must serve us as a criterion to advance in discovery of the mystery of the third secret. Its contents must square with its immediate context, the first two parts and conclusion of the secret, and, more generally, it must be in harmonious accord with the entirety of the Fatima message whose coherence is, moreover, utterly remarkable. To a second fact, the circumstances in which it was written down. If the circumstances in which it was revealed prove to us its fundamental unity, the dramatic circumstances in which it was written down alone reveal to us, as Father Alonso justly remarks, its tragic gravity. It is also important not to forget, as we study the third secret, the 3 months of interior struggles and veritable agony the seer had to face before receiving from on high, on January 2, 1944, through a new apparition of the Immaculate Virgin, the strength to finally overcome the obstacles in her soul opposing the writing of this final message. 3. A very illuminating enigma, since 1960, the popes have refused to reveal it. The fact is obvious. But it is worth the trouble to recall, with all possible precision. First of all, John XXIII, as we have seen. In spite of incontestable promises from the responsible authorities, in spite of the enthusiastic, anguished weight of the entire Catholic universe. Why did he prefer to its promised disclosure, the grave disadvantages of his silence? The immense disillusionment and scandal of the faithful? In any case, right up to his death on June 3, 1963, John XXIII never made a single explicit mention of Our Lady's secret. Although the famous expression of Cardinal Ottaviani was materially inexact, it expressed nicely the discredit cast upon the secret of Fatima by the Pope's express will. John XXIII himself placed the secret in another envelope, sealed it and placed it in one of those archives which are like a deep, dark, dark well, into which papers fall and nobody sees anything anymore. The Cardinal's expression is odious, but the reality is even more so. Pope Paul VI adopted the same attitude at the outset. Elected on June 21, 1963, shortly afterwards he asked to be given the text, a proof of his lively concern on the subject. Since nobody knew what John XXIII had done with it, Monsignor Capovilla was asked, and he was able to indicate where it had been placed. Paul VI, after his election, asked for information regarding this document. I no longer recall if it was in July 1963 or a few months later. We may believe he read the secret. It is indeed very probable that he read it immediately. But like John XXIII, he took no heed of it, and resolved not to speak of it at all. In February 1967, a few months before the solemn jubilee of the 1917 apparitions, there was new hope that the Pope would finally consent to divulge this famous secret. Rome's silence had not succeeded in causing it to be forgotten. Paul VI ordered Cardinal Ottaviani to make it known in his name that it would not yet be divulged in 1967, if indeed it ever would. Of course, we will quote in extenso the Cardinal's conference, which calls for important corrections. Let us merely point out that from 1967 until his death on August 6, 1978, Paul VI never spoke publicly about the secret of Fatima. We do not even have any testimony allowing us to suppose that he consulted such or such a prelate or member of his entourage on this subject. Hence, on the part of Paul VI, from one end of his pontificate to the other, there was an ice-cold silence on the third secret of Fatima, although on many occasions the press continued to speak of it, and some continued to request its disclosure. Indeed, on July 7, 1977, Cardinal Ottaviani could declare, "The true text of the secret written by the seer Lucy and sent to Pope John XXIII, sic, has truly remained a secret, because the sovereign pontiff has revealed nothing of this affair. We are even totally ignorant of where he placed the text sent to him." John Paul I had a profound devotion to Our Lady of Fatima. Eloquent testimony of this fact is his pilgrimage of 1977, during which, contrary to Cardinal Roncalli in 1956, he had made a point of speaking at length with Sister Lucy. Unfortunately, we do not know if his pontificate, which was too brief and tragically cut short, permitted him to find out Our Lady's final secret. As for John Paul II, we know from a reliable source that he read it. He did so before his trip to Fatima on May 13, 1982, the first anniversary of the attempt on his life. He even consulted a Portuguese priest of the Curia, for the priest to translate the text for the Pope with all the nuances of the language. But during his pilgrimage, he gave no hint of what he had thought of it, and in any case he did not reveal it. In the many discourses he pronounced in Portugal, he ignored it purely and simply, except on May 12, where he made an allusion which to us seems like the veiled, but offhand expression of his deliberate refusal to reveal it to the Church, "Do you want me to teach you a secret? It is simple, and it is no longer a secret. Pray, pray a great deal, saying the rosary every day." That was all. Finally, we have learned through the interview he granted to journalist Vittorio Mezzori on August 15, 1984, that Cardinal Ratzinger, prefect of the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith, had also read the secret, as Cardinal Ottaviani once did. But Ratzinger made it known at the same time that the Pope still did not have the intention of revealing it. In short, for 30 years, from John XXIII to John Paul II, it is always the same implacable refusal. Rome stubbornly remains deaf to all requests, from wherever they come, from the Portuguese hierarchy, from leaders of the Blue Army, from the Catholic Counter-Reformation League directed by the Abbe de Nance, from Father Alonso or Father Laurentin. This kind of obstinacy must have its reasons. Now all the reasons put forward in 1960, as we have seen, were designed to form a thick smoke screen to hide a truth which was too vexing. Cardinal Ottaviani's reasons in 1967 were not any more serious, as we will see, and the same is true for those recently advanced by his successor, Cardinal Ratzinger. The question remains, what then is the true motive for Rome's silence, the true reason which all the other explanations are intended to cover up? Father Alonso, with skillful precautions, explains it to us, writing: "We may now ask in a more pointed and critical way, are not the very contents of this third part the principal reason for it not being disclosed? It is so obvious that, on this point, all the experts are in agreement. But it is also vitally important, it is the content of this famous secret and it alone which, for 30 years has kept the popes not only from revealing it themselves, engaging their authority behind it, but even from permitting it to be published by the Bishop of Lyria or again by the Carmel of Coimbra, without any Roman guarantee. No, for 30 years the secret of Fatima, and it alone, has in a sense been on the index. Sister Lucy, and she alone, is reduced to silence." On November 15, 1966, Pope Paul VI abrogated Articles 1399 and 2318 of the Code of Canon Law, forbidding the publication of books and pamphlets propagating, without authorization, new apparitions, revelations, visions, prophecies or miracles. This abrogation is maintained in the new code, so much so that, since 1966, anybody can publish and spread among the Christian people the most fantastic revelations. Any imposteur, any devilry can be published. Nothing is forbidden anymore, everything is allowed to appear. Yet 3 months later, Paul VI made it known to the world, through the mouth of Cardinal Ottaviani, that the secret of Fatima would remain buried, no doubt for all time, in the most rigorous silence. For what reason, then? Certainly because of its contents alone, for what it announces, for what it denounces, which is astonishingly troubling for the Vatican authorities. In the final analysis, however, this refusal to divulge the secret becomes, as time passes, a positive bit of evidence which allows us, as we will see, to make great progress in discovering Our Lady's true message. We know, finally, one last fact which is important. 4. The prophecy of the third secret is being fulfilled before our eyes since 1960. Unimaginable in 1917, in 1944, or even in 1960, this secret, which the authorities obstinately, unjustly hide from us, as if by a wonderful divine revenge, is ending up becoming clear and revealing itself as it is fulfilled by events. For it is indeed being fulfilled before our eyes. In effect, a calendar, a timetable can be drawn. Where are we in the fulfillment of the prophecy? The response is clear and certain, the very text of the secret already divulged indicates it to us. On the one hand, we are not yet at the end of the events prophesied, in the end my Immaculate Heart will triumph. The Holy Father will consecrate Russia to me, and she will be converted, and a period of peace will be granted to the world. We are not there yet, Russia has not been consecrated as it ought to be. Sister Lucy has said so many times, even after May 13, 1982 and March 25, 1984. On the other hand, are the events predicted in the Third Secret still to come? This solution is reassuring but false, for we have a date, 1960. Although we are not formally told that it will mark the beginning of the secret's fulfillment, we know that beginning with this precise moment, indicated by Our Lady herself, the prophecy will seem clearer. Now the only reason which can make a prophecy clearer after a determined date is, without any doubt, the beginning of its fulfillment. Sister Lucy herself, in 1957, indicated to Father Fuentes the importance of 1960, as being both the year of the secret's disclosure, and, if nothing was done after that to correspond to Our Lady's requests, the decisive moment of its terrible fulfillment. The terminus a quo, starting point, and the terminus ad quem, ending point, of the prophecy have been determined. Therefore we can be sure that presently we are living through this period which the Third Secret refers to, that we are witnessing the events it announces. Besides, Sister Lucy declared a few years ago that the chastisement predicted by Our Lady had already begun. To summarize, the authentic contents of the Third Secret must simultaneously correspond to each of these four precise, objective criteria. 1. It must be in harmony with the immediate context of the secret, in which it is inserted. It must also be coherent with the Fatima message as a whole. 2. It must be concerned with grave events, terribly important for the Church. The circumstances in which it was written down, tormented as they were, attest to it. 3. The contents of the secret must take into account its non-disclosure by Popes John XXIII, Paul VI, and John Paul II. 4. Finally, it must have to do with events being fulfilled before our eyes, and which were already noticeable in 1944, the year when Bishop da Silva and Pope Pius XII could have read it, becoming clearer starting with 1960, when they, the events, would have of necessity to be revealed to the world. Already, we have four reliable bits of evidence which considerably illumine our path, and enable us to avoid most of the dead ends followed since 1960.